Next Chapter Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The 500 J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing too new. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend, the king of fleas for Angelo, talking the 500 until the end, talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500, talking the 500 until the end.
Second, I gotta record these intros, everybody. I get indigestion. But not from this song. Still, I'm sad. Monks. Not the TV show. By the Yardbirds from the 1965 record Having a Rave Up. It's also number 355 out of 500 on the 500 with me, Josh Adam Myers. What's up, Police Army? How y'all living? I'm in New York City. And, yeah, man. Let me tell you what's going on. I'll be in Los Angeles August 23rd. I'll be there the 20th through the 23rd doing shows, but I'm doing the goddamn Comedy Jam at the Comedy Store with Bill Burr, Tiffany Haddish, Melissa Villasenor, and Jay Farrow. Main room of the Comedy Store. I couldn't be more excited to come back to LA to do it at my home club. I love it. Tickets are at joshadammyers.com, so make sure you get them. It's probably sold out. Because it's a dope lineup. But if you are in New York, you can see me every night of the week at the Comedy Cellar in the Stand. Check at Josh Adam Myers for all my shows and everything. And follow me because I'm so close to 20,000 and I want to break that. Have you joined the Patreon? I plead to you guys every week. Join the Patreon, please. Please. If you listen to this show, if you fuck with the show and you're following along, we don't charge you anything. But we ask if you can contribute, please throw the $5 a month in to help support me, Adam, Emily, Melissa, Jeremiah, the whole family. The whole family. We are a tight family and we're only eating one bean a night. We are so hungry. So, so hungry. I think Lekka eats better than I do. We appreciate it. So join it. Go to patreon.com/the500 and completely annihilate that YouTube button. Subscribe. Completely obliterate it. Just smash the shit out of it. Subscribe. It helps. And we love you for it. Let's get to this week's album, The Yardbirds. I feel like I'm from Boston anytime I say it. The Yardbirds are one of those bands that just never made their way into my music circle, but their name kept popping up throughout the history of Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page. And so I got really excited to dig into this one because, you know, it's like you like I said, it's something that you hear about, you see, and then finally here it is. It's on the list, and we're eating. It's a big meal. And my guest today, ooh, it's a returner, the one and only Wayne Fetterman. Wayne is one of the funniest people that I've ever met in my life. He's got a brand new book out called The History of Stand-Up, from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle. It's incredible. You've seen him in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's so funny and such a vast information center that this episode was extremely easy for me because he knew everything about the record. And now that I don't have Morty, you know, it's like it's me and Adam, and we are we're trying our best. So hopefully you guys are listening, and hopefully you guys are appreciating what we're doing still. I'm having a blast right now, man. I'm really having a good time making these episodes and doing this one with Wayne. Hammers it in. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms. And if you're listening on Apple, leave us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Tell us how great the show is. Please don't shit on me, because I can't take it anymore. But you can. Just give us 5 stars if you're going to shit on me. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. Well, nothing left to say, but here we go with 355 out of 500. Having a rave up by the Yardbirds. Oh, enjoy the episode.
Adam, if you're not recording, you're in big. I don't care what Metallica shirt you're wearing. That doesn't matter to me.
Which one is Metallica, Slayer, Anthrax?
Oh, and by the way, you know I saw Slayer's last show.
Which one? I saw the one right before the last one at the Forum.
Yeah. I was at the last one at the Forum.
Are you a Slayer fan?
I'm a music fan.
Okay.
I just thought it would be a fun thing to go to. I have some great video from inside it. But that's a side thing we can talk.
You know
about
what was great about that show is that, like, I know like 3 songs by Slayer, but much like you, I woke up that morning and completely forgot that they were on their final tour and they were playing their final shows in Los Angeles. And I remember I'm a big bath guy, and I was getting ready to jump in the bath, and as I like opened up my phone, I go, holy shit. I was like, Slayer's playing at the Forum tonight and tickets are super cheap on StubHub. And then what I did was I got into the bathtub and I slipped and I nailed my head on that cement, like ceramic thing that sticks out for the soap.
Of course.
And I was concussed. And so I couldn't go that night, but then I went to the next night.
You know that the bathroom is the most dangerous room in the house. You know that, right?
I know that.
That, right?
Yeah, it's like my mom teaches me that. My dad on his face. My dad's final words were, always take your time getting into a tub. And then he passed.
Jesus, is that true? That can't be true.
Yeah, it's the last thing he said.
Oh my God.
He never said I love you, but he said
the 3 words I needed to hear.
Make sure you put down a plastic thing in the tub.
Exactly.
So you have some grip, because you're going to slip one day.
It's all wet. Because
that was my dad's whole saying throughout life. Make sure in the tub there's grip, because you're going to slip.
Oh, he was okay. So he was doing, what do they call it for the rap community when you, bars.
My dad spit bars. My dad actually was in an all Jewish hip hop group that was before the one that I was in, because everybody, all my Fleece Army listeners know that I speak about it all the time. I was in an all Jewish hip hop group called The Shekels, which I actually have every album in the move from Los Angeles to New York. I mean, I didn't bring a lot of stuff, but I brought every The Shekels record. We're gonna put it online. We're going to give it to the Patreon people, and then we're going to sell it as an NFT, because I heard the kids are doing that. It's pretty popular. Okay,
that's over.
It's over.
By the way, I used to do a joke that I was in a Jewish heavy metal group called Black Shabbos, but then apparently somebody made that a legitimate band.
Black Shabbos?
Yeah, I think that's like a legitimate band.
There's a Passover group. Oh, man. I need you to look it up for me, Adam, because they do Uptown Pesach, which is like a parody of Uptown Funk.
Yeah.
And it's like, Arthur Coleman on Friday night. Come on, everybody, hide the matzah.
I have to say, I know you're enjoying it. I get a little embarrassed by that stuff.
So do I. I send it to like three people every year.
I get a little embarrassed like a by it. It's just like, can we do better as Jews than just this?
No, like we can't. We can't, Wayne.
I'm sorry. I know I should have pride in that kind of stuff, but I'm just like, ugh.
Wayne, do you, I know, Wayne.
No, basic.
It's so basic. Adam, do you have Uptown Pesach?
I have Uptown Funk Passover Funk Parody. That's the first thing.
I think that's it. Just give me like a taste of it and just get to the chorus if you can.
Eating it up at the Seder. Got kid along with Saint Laurent. Said, I'll be come on for later. Oh, Rick. Oh, Moses, he's a magician. Frog's lies on his.
All right, kill this, because this isn't the one. There's like nine versions of this. That's how bad.
That's how basic it is.
That's how that basic
anyone
this
can
is.
Basically do that thing.
All right, well, let's talk about non-basic shit.
Yes.
Let's talk about the, well, first of all, this is your second time coming back to the podcast.
I can't believe I got asked back after what happened. Well, with the Steve Miller Fly Like an Eagle debacle.
What was the debacle again?
I'm kidding. There's, like I went off the rails or something.
Reddit blew up and we were trashed on the subreddits. You're Fetty Wap. You're one of my favorite people. I love riffing with you. I love hanging with you. And we had so much fun on Steve Miller Band. And this we were throwing out like Hail Marys because we went to like Jeff Beck and like he's not doing anything. And then Clapton,
he got kicked out of the band, by the way.
I know, dude. We're going to talk all about this.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, you can bring it up. But you know, there's no harm, no foul. There's no order anymore. It's just we go.
There
where
isn't.
We go.
Oh, I love it. Free form.
So we bringing you back for the Yardbirds having a rave up.
Yes.
So why don't you tell me why you're on the podcast? Why is this record? What does it mean to you? And like, tell me about like how you first got into them.
Well, the Yardbirds are unlike Steve Miller Band, which were when I was growing up, those songs were coming out on the radio and we listened to them. The Yardbirds, I got to retroactively through, of course, Led Zeppelin, when I found out about Led Zeppelin and Cream. And then a little later, the Jeff Beck group, which I was more into Cream and Led Zeppelin. And then I found out, oh, all of these guys, Clapton, Beck, and Jimmy Page, play guitar for the Yardbirds. Like, who is this band? And so that's when I kind of deep dived into them a little bit. So it was kind of a retro thing. I didn't know their song. I was more into, at this point in the mid-60s, much more into Beatles and even the Monkees a little bit. You know, just like very pop chart stuff. And so that's how I got into them. How about you?
I started doing this podcast and it came in at number, what number is this? What number is this, Adam?
355.
It came in at number 355.
Had you heard of them before? Had you ever heard of them?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know everything you know.
Dude, everybody knows the Yardbirds. I know that one song that's really popular that anytime I tell Alexa to play Yardbirds, which she's about to do now because I just said that probably. But
For Your Love?
They always play For Your Love. I know that from like Guy Ritchie movies, but I had no idea that was the Yardbirds. It's much like you, Led Zeppelin. Always Led Zeppelin. It's always Led Zeppelin. Cream.
So sad.
I still have yet to ding into Cream, but I have done a nice light listen of Cream. Mm-hmm. Like I know the hits, I know stuff like that. Yardbirds, I knew nothing about. But I did know, like you said, that Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page have all played for this group. So obviously, you know that if these guys are playing with this band, this band is something.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. They're I call them maybe the ultimate bridge and influential band because I don't know, for some reason, maybe you can speak to this.
Please.
In the early 60s, England went nuts for American R&B and particularly those Chicago blues singers. Like they all of them were collecting those albums or copying those riffs. Eric Clapton is a perfect example of that. And I always wondered, I was just like, is there anybody more white than English people? Like they define it. They are the thing. And like that they were so into the blues still, to me, blows my mind. Any idea on why that was? Maybe because it was so opposite their culture, or what do you think?
They are the whitest people in the world, and not even just like in their like, oh, hello, yeah, how are you?
Right. Would
you
stiff like, upper,
would you like some plum pudding with a nice Yorkshire? They also, because of the clouds, they are actually pigmently.
Oh, I see.
Extremely yeah. white people, mm-hmm. but. Because of that, and I've said this a million times on the podcast, that's where you get the best music in the world, because they come from these families of being restricted and, you know, you know, My Left Foot and you know, Bridgerton and any of the what is it? Downton Abbey, all that. Like, that's everybody in England. So at least my perception, which now we just lost all the English listeners that are like, oh, I'm turning this off now and putting on a Malcolm Gladwell. But because of the clouds and because of the darkness there, you get this very emotional music. And so in my opinion, going off of what you said, I think you're getting this love for the blues because it's the exact opposite every single thing that they were brought up enjoying, listening to. Like, I mean,
would you say it's comparable, sorry to interrupt, to like white suburban kids embracing hip hop?
I would say it's 100% that. I was going to say it was like Southern California kids embracing their love for reggae music. But then that didn't make sense. I have a new joke about that, about why white people shouldn't do reggae.
Oh, really? You can shoehorn it in if you want to.
You can do
a bit in the middle of this.
No bits. No bits. You know, my dad said, no bits.
Wait a minute.
Straight and tits. That's what my dad said. My dad said, no bits, only tits. My dad was a sexual deviant. Yeah. God rest his soul. Miss you, Big Al.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
So, I think there definitely has something to do with it, but also that's the exact opposite of their culture. And I mean, kids are always influenced by stuff that is, you know, I mean, like you said, taboo. White suburban, white suburban kids, you know, they grow up in these cul-de-sacs, and they grow up in the middle of nowhere outside of cities. And then they hear, I mean, look at me. I remember hearing Public Enemy for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is the coolest music I've ever heard in my life. And I was obsessed with like D Nice and Public Enemy and Kid in Play. Right. And it's just, it's a culture thing. And I think when you restrict a culture, there's going to be an opposite reaction. It's energies, man. You put out good, bad's always going to come back. If you know, it's just an equal and opposite reaction. So if you're holding somebody back, they're going to fight through that. And then basically just do the exact opposite. I don't know how they were getting the music. Adam, do you have an idea of how these kids were getting the music? I'm assuming on like ham radio stations.
Well, I think they, if I'm not mistaken, those guys from Chess Records and, you know, all of them would tour England because they were getting crowds over there. So yeah. I think that was part of it. And then they'd have these albums. And I remember like the stories of Keith Richards sharing his records with, you know, with Mick Jagger. And like, they were like sort of, I guess, little diamonds in the rough. I don't know. Cause they weren't charting. There was no way maybe Howlin' Wolf was charting. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Yardbirds are a link to that. Cause they were into, obviously they were the band, as you know, that took over Crawdaddy once the Rolling Stones hit and then left. Like that was their big, that was that little club in, I think it was called Richmond is the place in England, suburb of London. And so they were the band that took over the house band at Crawdaddy, which, did you ever read Crawdaddy as like literature? Do you know what I'm talking about at all?
No, I don't know anything about it. I actually do have that fact listed, but you know, yeah. Tell me more. Tell me what you know about it.
Well, I'm sure I don't have the whole story, but there was a scene where the Rolling Stones, you know, got very popular in this little room called Crawdaddy. And then Yardbirds took over, but Crawdaddy also became the name of this rock zine, is the way I would call it. Like that started with Rolling Stone and Cream and, you know, all of these like literature talking about rock music, because rock music was so dismissed at that time. You know, even with the Beatles, and stuff, it was just completely dismissed as like not, you couldn't even get, a lot of the rock musicians couldn't even get in the union because they couldn't play, couldn't read music. They're like, oh, well, I'm sorry. Anyway, so that's it. So they started their band there, and then they luckily, like one in a million shot, who's their lead guitarist or their second lead guitarist is this teenager, Eric Clapton, who, you know, was this dev. He not only had talent, but he had a talent for practice. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's obsessive compulsiveness. What would you call that? Like, he would like work on B.B. King and Freddie King licks like hours, 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 days and days.
Obsession. Just to, that's always some of the best people when we become obsessed. You know comics that are like that are just obsessed with the,
right.
My friend Angelo, the reason we're doing the podcast, he would go every day to the Borders on the corner of Vine and Sunset. And he would just look it through magazines and look through the sections for books and open up a book, find something that he was interested in, and then write down a little nugget that he thought was funny. And he would just work for 6-7 hours a day writing jokes and then do it every night. And it was just, you know, rinse, repeat. It's the same thing every day.
Yeah. So that was that band. So they were a blues band because Clapton was a blues purist at the time. And it's so interesting you should bring up For Your Love, that, what is it, Siri? No, who plays the records in your apartment?
I can't say it, so go on.
Okay, it's, okay. Alexa, is it Alexa?
Yeah. She didn't hear that.
She can, will she hear that through the, no, because you're wearing headphones.
I'm wearing headphones, thank God.
So it's interesting that, you know, that's the reason Eric Clapton left that band is because specifically of that song.
Yeah. So I just found out from Adam, blues initially made its way to Europe during World War II when African-American GIs brought their musical tastes with them.
Okay.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So another positive come from world from Hitler invading Europe, right?
So that means they're breaking.
How many positives came out of that thing?
They're breaking into Auschwitz, and it's just like the Jews are all hungry, like they're trying to eat, and it's like,
right? Can we do that?
So that song. So they were a blues band, which we're going to find out when we listen to this album, is the second side is all blues covers. And
so, all right. Let's talk about the record. Okay, do we want to talk about the record, or do we want to talk about the history of the Yardbirds first?
Well, I thought we kind of got the history a little bit. Do I need to go by?
So here's what I've got. The Yardbirds were formed in a southwest suburb of London in 63 with core lineup of vocalist, harmonica player. I'm going to fuck this last name up. Keith Reif, R-E-I-F. Yep. Did I say that right?
Yep. Died in 1976. Yep.
God, I love you. Yeah. I wish we do. One day I hope we do an episode on Pistol Pete Maravich, and then I won't call you.
The great music of Pistol Pete.
A shooting free throw.
Behind the basketball.
Drummer Jim McCarthy, rhythm guitarist.
Is bassist. It McCarthy or McCarty?
I don't think
there's an H in there. But I've heard him say McCarthy. So let's say,
I got it. I got it written as McCarthy.
Yeah, he's the only one still in the band today. Yeah,
they're still doing it,
I believe.
Okay,
he is the one last.
Dude, if you don't have Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, and Jeff Beck, GFY. Right. All right, so Jim McCarthy or McCarty, rhythm guitarist, bassist Chris Draga, or if it's Spanish, it's Draya. And bassist producer Paul Samwell Smith. Then lead guitar was held at various points by Topham initially, and then three.
Yes.
This is crazy. I mean, we mentioned it already, but three guitar, not players, legends.
Right.
Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, and Jeff Beck.
Right. Not in that order.
Which I have met Jeff Beck through at the Comedy Store.
What?
Through my friend Tol Wilkenfeld. Nice. who played bass. There's a very, very famous they're playing, I think, like a jazz festival somewhere, and Jeff Beck is you know, they're jamming, and Tol's on bass, and then he gives her a bass solo, and she's, I think, like, you know, she was discovered by Prince at 16. So I think, like, she's probably in her early 20s. She looks so young, and she's just shredding. And you see Jeff Beck. Like,
I know who she is. I know she's great. I've seen the footage of her. Yeah.
Great
yeah.
friend of the podcast. I love her to death.
Has she done records on it?
Not yet. We've got some coming up because she's close with, like, Leonard Cohen, and we've talked about her doing Jeff Buckley. But those are in years. We got, like, at least another year, I think, until any of those come up. But meeting Jeff Beck, it's like one of those things where it's like the dude had an aura. He's a tiny man. He's not like a big dude. Mm-hmm. But it was just he just looked so much like a rock star. I mean, they like I said, like, certain people have that glow, and he had that glow. Can I just jump in?
Because I've only seen Jeff Beck live twice, never met him. And once a show at Universal Amphitheater, I think that's how you pronounce it, right?
I thought you had a stroke halfway through saying that.
Oh my God, he stroked out. With him, he toured with Stevie Ray Vaughan. It was a double bill, guitar sling. Yeah. So that I had to see, as you know, I'm a guitar dude. Yeah. And then just right before the pandemic with his old buddy Rod Stewart at the Hollywood Bowl, he came out and did a few of those songs, the old Beckola songs that were just incredible.
I can imagine how good that was.
It was pretty good. The thing is, Jeff Beck to me is a great mystery because he's this genius guitar player, but he always seems to be, like, getting in trouble or effing up things. And, like, he did this with this band. He would not show up for gigs. He was, like, not reliable, all of that kind of stuff. And he had the look. There's no one who has the look better than him, right?
So my question, and Adam, I want you to find this out. What kind of trouble did he get into? What do you know about Jeff Beck?
Well, I know that when he was with the Yardbirds, he would miss gigs, and that he was more into this girl. That he was dated this super hot girl in California who was like a young movie star, and he got sick a lot on the tour, and eventually he was so unreliable he got kicked out of the band. And also, even though he brought Jimmy Page into the band, because they played together for a short period of time, he really wanted to be doing his own thing, which was fine. I mean, he ended up doing Truth and Beckle, and, you know, and then he was off to the races. But so that always surprised me, because he hated touring. He just hated. I mean, the Yardbirds tours are notorious for that band getting ripped off by American promoters. Like, they made no money. They were like in like Greyhound buses. They didn't even have their own bus. Mm-hmm. They traveled like you bought a ticket, put their stuff under the, and then went to the gig. And it's just terrible. And and it was just like, I just want to be in one place and create some music. So that's what I know about Jeff Beck, and seeing him twice. And now that I know that you met him, and he had an aura about him. That's my new thing.
Aura.
I didn't know he was a little guy, though.
I mean, first of all, I'm 5'9", so everybody, you know, if he was on my height, he's like, I think he's, look up his height, Adam. Right. Find out how tall Jeff Beck is. Well, I think, well, I tell you, like, I'm not yelling at him. This is what Adam does.
5'10"?
All right, maybe he's not a little guy. Maybe I'm a little guy.
But anybody's height that's listed, you can usually take like an inch or two right off
of it. Oh, I love it. It's like a Kmart discount. Take a couple inches off at the register. Blue Light Special. Love it.
So the name of the band is a reference to Jack Kerouac's On the Road, which referred to Rail Yard Hobos. After the Rolling Stones, like you said, left the residency at the Crawdaddy Club, the Yardbirds took over and got the ball rolling for them. Like other British R&B inspired bands, they played covers of artists like Muddy Waters, Bo Diddley, and Howlin' Wolf. This is a tough name I'm going to fuck up. Giorgio Gomulski.
Yeah, he's their manager, right?
Yep, he took over as their manager. He was running the Crawdaddy Club, and their first record producer set them up for their first tour as a backup band for Chicago blues great Sonny Boy Williamson. Oh, right,
they went on tour with Sonny.
And their
supposedly
first,
that was a nightmare. That Sonny couldn't even not read music, couldn't read. And so he, this is incredible, just show business. So they would like make a set list, and he was like, he couldn't read the set list.
He was like, I just
can you imagine?
I mean,
talk about the blues.
What do they have to do to get him to know what song's next?
I have no idea. I would like,
that we're doing that one. It's like, that sounds like every song we're doing. Fuck. That could be 19 different songs on this set list.
Yes, they did tour with that guy. And that was and actually there's an album of it. That's not too bad, actually.
Well,
it was released later. Yeah.
So Five Live Yardbirds was the first release in the UK in 64, but Having a Rave Up was their first American release the next year. This nor any equivalent was released in the UK, but a few tracks were released as singles, as a B-side, or on later compilations. The band broke up in 1968 with Reef and McCarthy forming Renaissance and Page starting Led Zeppelin. McCarthy and Dreja reformed in the 90s, but Dreja left in 2012, leaving McCarthy as the only original active member. A major part of their legacy was how well received their live shows were, and maybe weren't a band that weren't fully appreciated until much later on.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't appreciate them till much later on. And I do feel like one of the problems with this band, and may rest in peace, was the lead singer, because he was not a great singer. And he had kind of like a thin, reedy, and he was a little pitchy, as the kids like to say now.
Yeah.
And so he just wasn't a great, and he wasn't as charismatic as, let's say, you know, he's following in Mick Jagger's footsteps. Like, that's the band.
The most charismatic lead singer dripping, in the history of.
Right. Dripping with charisma. And so anyway, so I think that was part of the problem with the this band was sort of star-crossed. That's why I'm saying it's a bridge band. It's a bridge from Chicago blues guys into until London, and then out of there we get Cream, Led Zeppelin, and to a lesser extent Beck, Jeff Beck with Beckola and stuff like that. But it's like it's just an amazing story. 5 years together, and you know, and they fired that manager guy. They thought he was like taking not you know. Remember that tour? The U.S. like they were making no money and getting ripped off. And the last manager of the band, I know you're going to get to this, I'm just jumping to it, was the manager of Led Zeppelin, Peter, whatever his name is. I'm blanking on his name right now. But
Peter
anyway,
North, the porn star. Peter North.
Peter Grant. I don't know.
Peter Grant. Yeah,
how many times have I seen The Song Remains the Same? He's like the star of, he's the fifth star of them yelling at the dude. You ever seen that clip of him yelling?
Oh yeah,
at the guy who's selling T-shirts, or he's just going nuts on this guy selling posters outside Madison Square Garden, or it might have been in Baltimore. You know, that movie is so cut from a lot of different shows, and just going nuts on that poor guy. He was like
he was scary, man.
Yeah,
he was
don't forget
scary his dude. Here it is.
This isn't Europe or England. No, I can see that. It's so inefficient. Talk to me, because I'm the manager of the group. You had people inside this building selling posters, and you didn't know anything about it.
I didn't know about it. As soon as we found out about it, we stopped it.
Yeah. As soon as we found out about it, we told you, you stopped it.
I absolutely
regret it.
Can we all just admit that Peter Grant looks like Andy from Pee Wee's Big Adventure? Remember that when he goes to the diner and he goes to look at the dinosaurs, and then she's like, "Oh no, it's Andy!" And then he runs and he gets chased. That's Andy, dude. Look how big that dude is.
Yeah, he's
man.
huge guy. So
no wonder the band never got in trouble for any of the bad shit they did, because he was the person that was going up to the hotel.
The
clerk,
enforcer,
being like,
yeah.
He was like, "You go fuck yourself. I don't care if they threw a TV out the window. Your window should be stronger." He is like the British Andre the Giant. Yeah, no, he's more like Earthquake. You remember pull up Earthquake, because he looks like Earthquake.
The comedian?
And then pull up Andy. No, he looks like
the comedian Earthquake.
He's like, yeah, dude, he's performing with Monique at the at the Louis Gossett Jr. Amphitheater in Atlanta. We're having a time. We're having a rave up.
Oh, Earthquake the wrestler. I see.
He's having a rave up. Look at that guy. Jesus Christ.
I thought maybe you would show a clip from the movie Earthquake with Walter Matthau. Okay.
All right. So let's talk about this record.
This record is really fascinating, because it's first the title, Having a Rave Up. Now, kids still go, or used to still go to raves. They don't call them raves.
I went to raves from 1998 until about 2005 in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. I don't think this is the music. This is definitely not the music that they played there.
No. But I'm talking about the word rave, like what it meant in musically. And is before we even get to the songs on there.
Do you want me to tell you what it means? Because I have it.
All right, let's see what it says.
So the name of the album refers to the rave up arrangement the band used in some of the songs. Raving up is when a band would increase the beat to double time, usually during a middle instrumental section, to build the improv in the middle of a song to a climax. The concept has its roots in jazz.
Yep.
Porn, Satan, drugs, therapy. It's not just the list of what I'm up to this weekend. I'm comedian Kiki Anderson, and those are just a handful of the taboo topics I've poked and prodded at so far on my podcast, Indecent, the show where we peel at the wallpaper of polite society. Each episode digs into the dark underbelly of our culture to dissect the things we aren't allowed to talk about around the dinner table, featuring conversations with comedians, activists, journalists, academics. They all help me figure out the who, what, and why behind what is and isn't acceptable behavior. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO. Mwah.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
So they would rave up in the middle of these songs to get the crowds going. Again, I think the Yardbirds thing was that they were a live band. Although when I see footage of them live, they seem a little loose to me. Having said that, I'm saying the word rave up is still in the culture. You went to raves. I don't even know if they call them raves anymore. What do they call them now?
EDM shows.
Yeah. Okay. So the first side of the album is all studio tracks.
Yeah.
The second side of the album, four live tracks that were from their first album that was never released in the United States, which was called Five Live Yardbirds. Remember, you just spoke about that.
Mm-hmm.
So they took supposedly the best four. So it's Jeff Beck on side one, Eric Clapton on side two.
And
how crazy is that?
It's insane, but can I be completely honest with you?
Yeah.
Second half of the record, it just blows away the first half.
Oh, so you like the live. Okay.
I love it so, so much. First of all, it's a great record. Let's just say that straight away. Let's look at some of the tracks. All right. So it opens with You're a Better Man Than I. Can you play a little bit of it? Because I got a comment on this. Just play. Get to the chorus.
If her wealth doesn't strive, well then, mister, you're a better man than I. Yeah, mister, you're a better man than I.
Well, mister, you're a better man than I. This is the most 60s sounding song ever written, in my opinion. This is a step below Incense and Peppermints by Strawberry.
Oh, great call. Yeah.
Great song, but
no question. Here's the thing about side one that we're gonna get to with this track in particular, but only one song is written by anyone in the Yardbirds.
Mm-hmm.
That's on their, never mind the cover songs they do on the other side. So this one is written by Mike Hug from Manfred Mann. Here's the crazy thing about this song. Recorded while they were on tour in America in a little place called Sun Studios with Sam Phillips. You might remember him from Elvis Presley.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know Sam Phillips?
No.
I love it. Sam Phillips is the guy that discovered Elvis, the Big Bang Moment of rock and roll, when he does That's All Right Mama in the studio. You'd never seen any of those crazy TV movies?
And now I haven't, but now I'm gonna.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shame you. I did not mean to shame you, but I literally thought everyone knew this guy.
I felt this a little triggered.
This is just a problem with my age, to tell you the truth. So anyways, you know that Elvis Presley in Memphis, at this little studio, Sun Studios, recorded these songs that sort of started, not completely, but a lot of people think of like that's the moment, like kind of rock and roll really moved from R&B to like something, more mainstream, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Elvis Presley, That's All Right Mama, So anyway, Sam Phillips was the guy that ran the studio. So this is like a legendary studio where bands from England or all over the world would come and try to recapture that magic of that studio. So on tour, they recorded this song. They recorded another one that's also on, but we'll get to that later. I thought that was fascinating. Maybe not.
No, well, it's very fascinating. Very fascinating. But you know what's also fascinating? Evil Hearted You.
Oh, yes.
Originally written by future 10cc member Grant Goldman.
He's the best. He is Jewish, best. Jewish. I mean, how rock and roll.
You didn't even have to say that. His last name's Goldman. I mean,
Goldman,
we all know
Steinberg.
It.
Yeah, reduced it from Goldman Steinberg. I know.
Dude, Yitzhak Rabin is turning in his grave right now that you actually said that. He was like,
"I'm
what?
Sorry."
A music critic referred to it as one of the gloomiest hit singles in all of 60s British rock. I actually think this sounds like every 60s spy movie. Play a little bit of Evil Hearted You.
Evil Hearted You, you always
That's, you hear the spy shit though.
Yeah, it's very, there's a lot, like, of, a lot of reverb on those guitars.
A lot of reverb. Great song. And then you got I'm a Man. This is originally a Bo Diddley song.
Okay, this is where I'm going to disagree with you. I like this version better than the live version on the same album, by the way. On side two, they also do I'm a Man. So you like the I'm a Man Eric Clapton more than the Jeff Beck?
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah, can I really you do. Go to, this is going to be, again, this is another weird thing, recorded at Chess Studios in Chicago. That's where Muddy Waters started. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Can we go to the bridge of I'm a Man? Because a lot of people call this version where Jeff Beck and Keith, the lead singer slash harmonica player, kind of does a jam in the middle of this song as an example of rave up in the middle of a pop song. Having a rave up.
Oh, give me the cat tranquilizer and give me my UFO Jinkos. I love it. I love
That's incredible.
That is incredible. Part
of, you got to hear that whole song. I'm gonna stand by that's a better version of it than the Clapton version, but I might be wrong.
You know, listen, when you break it down like that and I see your enthusiasm behind it, you kind of sway me, but here's something really cool. Bo Diddley praised this cover, calling it beautiful.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah,
which is great. Yeah, that's really cool to have the guy that wrote the song, you know, fucking be like, dude, you guys killed it. Still, I'm sad. Love this song. Very
you
Western.
You do. This is the song I don't like. I love that you love it. Because you like weird.
Yeah, I love the Oz. Can you play the Oz?
It's all through it.
Oh. Oh, there it is, dude. You want to hear something really Jewish? This was probably written by Goldman. This
it
is
wasn't,
like very,
dude.
This is very Pesach-y. You know what I mean? Like, oh.
You remember I said that only one song was written by anyone in the Yardbirds?
Yeah.
This is the song.
Fuck that, dude.
This is the song. Jim McCarthy or McCarty or whatever his name is, the drummer and the bass player, Paul. Samwell Smith wrote this song. You love it. It's Gregorian to me.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I like it. You know how much I love Gregorian shit. I always have. We talk about it all the time. We go out to eat and you say, Josh, why are you so into Gregorian music? And I go, because my grandfather was a monk. My great grandfather was a monk.
Okay.
My favorite movie is In the Name of the Rose.
You like the TV show Monk?
I love the TV show Monk.
Yeah.
It was either between comedy or monking. And I said, I'm going to do comedy because I got to stop the bloodline of monking.
Well, this is my question for you.
Yeah.
I know the Gregorians. I know they're monks. I know they're known for chanting. Is there any other music that Gregorians did? Because I always hear like there's Gregorian chants. Is there ever Gregorian, I don't know, Gregorian power chords or Gregorian? Counter melodies.
Adam, get ready to pull this shit up. Pull up Enigma. They had a dude, the Gregorian genre.
Come
the
on.
Gregorian genre had like a flash in like the late 80s, early 90s, I think, when that came out. Enigma. It's all Gregorian chanting fuck music. So they got into like the Marvin Gaye territory of making love sounds. So you got it, Adam, you got it. Enigma. Okay. Pull it up.
This I'm dubious. Dubious if people are here making out. Oh, I see.
I mean, come on, dude.
This
is it? Here, oh, this is where it gets good.
Okay, that music is like, that's the music that like triggers the Antichrist return. Like, that was so inappropriate.
Very the Roman thing. Polanski, like Rosemary's Baby.
The thing, that's like the beginning of The Exorcist. I was like, come on, that's wrong to put like those beats, to put a Roland 808 underneath. 808,
yeah.
Underneath. Come on, guys.
Still a good song. Still a good use still of the good, Gregorians.
But still, you're missing it. My point. You're missing no. my point. They're the still point? Chanting in that song. It's still about the chant.
Yeah.
They just put a kind of a hip-hoppy beat underneath it. It yeah. kind of reminds me a little of what Ethel Merman did with her disco album. We'll move on. Okay. You don't know anything about that.
I don't know anything about that.
I know. Someone's going to enjoy that.
Is that, it's just like a techno beat to luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight.
Yeah, it was a four on the floor. Yeah, it was a four on the floor.
Rave up. So then you have Heart Full of Soul. This is
guess
the first
who wrote Heart Full of Soul?
Goldman.
Yes, our Jewish friend.
Yep.
By the way, just to loop back to our Jewish buddy, Goldman also wrote For Your Love. The song that Alexa likes to play whenever you mention the band.
She can't hear you. You can say
oh, she
it.
Can't. Okay.
Not at all.
She's always listening. She's always listening.
Dude, Jeff Bezos knows.
By the way, she just texted me. That's crazy. She is really okay.
That's who I was texting with. But listen,
Heartful of Soul. I guess I'm a grand Goldman fan. Like, I'm just a fan of that guy.
Here's something really cool that we pulled up. So they tried to use an Indian sitar player for the intro, but didn't like how it sounded. So Jeff Beck tried to play the part of on an electric guitar, making it sound as close to a sitar as possible. Here, can you play that? This is something even cooler. The use of the fuzz box guitar effect in this song is also believed to be the first significant use of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is why I'm saying they're a bridge to like all of that stuff. Psychedelica, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I feel like that's it. Obviously, this is right before the Beatles used sitar on, I don't know, was it Norwegian Wood or one of those songs?
Yep.
Yeah, I just love these songs. I love these Graham Goldman songs.
So these are all great. This the first half of the record's great.
This is why I like this album.
But then
it
kicks in and you got a train keeps a rolling. And as I was talking to Adam before you clicked on, I mean, this has been covered by how many people? Adam?
I mean, Aerosmith has the most famous one.
Yes. Aerosmith used to, and I've seen Aerosmith maybe 8 times. Through the years, seen him a number of times. A little bit of a brag. Nobody knows this, but I'm also in the crowd when they shot the video for Love in an Elevator. Like, I'm an Aerosmith fan. Going down.
Going down.
Yeah. So, anyway, but during the taping of that song, which is just they're just basically miming to the track as they play it over and over again, right? During a production break, they stopped and the band was like, let's just play a song, and then they played Train Kept a Rolling.
Wow.
While we were just as like, you know, because they're it's Aerosmith. I you know me, I'm a huge fan, especially of that front man. What's his name?
Steven Tyler.
I'm kidding. So anyway, yes, Train Kept a Rolling is a perfect example of a rave up, especially the way Aerosmith did it.
Yeah.
Did they do it slow and then did it? I don't know if it's quite double time, but a faster stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your feeling about Aerosmith? And
you talking to me? Are you talking to Adam? Love them. I mean, it's one of those bands that's like, I've started really, they were popular, their biggest popular during my lifetime is the later half of their life. So Permanent Vacation, Kick, Get the Life, or whatever the one with
Get a Life. Yeah.
Get a Life.
Permanent Vacation. Yes. Yes.
That was great. I love Angel. I love,
I don't want to miss a thing. You don't want to.
My favorite song by them is really, Living on the Edge.
Yeah. This is when it's interesting. This is like the opposite. They're sort of the opposite in that they wrote a lot of their songs. Obviously, they wrote Dream On, which was their first big hit. They did cover Train Kept a Rollin', this Yardbirds version. But later, during your version, they hired songwriters. Jennifer Warren and Desmond Child wrote a lot of those. I call them, I don't know, they're sort of like for girls as well as guys, those songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's
you're right. No, they're a great band. You know, I'm excited to really dig into like I was with Burr one night and I was like, he was talking about Aerosmith. I was like, dude, I never listened to Toys in the Attic. And so he picked out all his favorite Aerosmith songs that weren't like that were all like before like 1980 or something. And
right.
I mean, it was just everything. I was like, good God. Like, I love the Guns N' Roses version of Mama Kin.
Of course. Dude, yeah, that's from Rocks, right? Or something.
Such a good version. Speaking of which, I just went to go see Guns N' Roses. I think I talked about it in the intro for the episode that just came out, but dude, Axl Rose's voice is just
great. It's as good as ever, right? I'm kidding. Was it bad? Tell me what happened.
Dude, the band killed it, and Axl, I think he's singing, like, so during the sound check.
What do you mean?
The sound guy comes.
You were
out
there and, for the sound check?
Oh yeah, dude, I was like front row too. My friend, I'm a buddy with Duff's manager, and I love Brian to death. Dude, the band rules. Go see him if you've never seen them. They still sound great.
Oh, I saw them open for the.
There were certain points of the set though. It's because here's what they were doing. The sound guy comes out and he's going like check one, check two, and then he goes like this. He goes, I'm barely talking, and he's holding the Axl mic, and it sounds so loud. He's like, I'm barely talking. So I think Axl isn't singing from his chest voice or even his throat voice. He's singing from his head voice. So he's singing like, he's like, you know, welcome to the jungle, we got fun and games. So he's singing almost like in a squeak, so he doesn't really project, but it's so loud that it just matches. He did hit some crazy notes, but it's just, dude, and this is the thing in his defense, those songs are so hard to sing, Wayne, like so hard to sing. I mean, even, you know, back in the day, to be able to hit those notes and sing in that register. So to do it now at like close to 60, and you're doing a tour schedule of like every other day, you're doing a fucking stadium and you're doing a, you know, a 30 song set list, power to him. I'm not, No shade, but I saw them two other times prior to this since they got back together, and I mean, his voice sounded incredible. Maybe it was an off night. Maybe it was just an off night. You know what I mean? Right.
Maybe he was nervous. You were in the crowd in the front row.
I was there.
Yeah, I
was there.
That.
Yeah. But here, back to this record, though. God's honest truth, in my opinion, I mean, the second half of this record. I mean, you know, because first of all, Smokestack Lightning.
Okay, Alan Wolf. Yeah,
it's just a great song. This is also, like you said, the last four tracks, they're all Clapton.
He's all done at the Marquee Club. Have you ever been to there?
I haven't.
Yeah, that's the famous kind of a London club. It's sort of, I would say, the equivalent. I hope I don't get killed on Reddit for this or Twitter. I would say it's the equivalent of like the Whiskey or the Troubadour or something like that. It's like the club where a lot of people recorded at, and especially those rock bands at that time. Like, it's still around, but it's at the Marquee Club, not a Crawdaddy.
This was a Crawdaddy.
Yeah, a bigger venue in London. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Howlin' Wolf's most popular song. It's released in 56.
Yeah.
You know, Respectable is great. Originally written by the Isley Brothers. I'm a man. Here's the big battle.
Here's the Fetterman battle right now.
The Fetterman Myers battle. Which version is better?
It's the Jewish throwdown. Let's do it.
I gotta go with the live version, dude.
I know. Let's listen to a little of that. Let's listen
to the
live
version. I'm a man.
I'm a man.
Yeah, dude. You got me, man. You take my money. Take my money. Take my money. It's perfect. You can hear the energy in the room. You can
feel
the vibe. The band vibing. It's everything.
I can say in my defense is the guy who wrote the song, named Bo Diddley, not his real name, Elias McDaniels, his real name, thinks the Beck version is better. It's no big deal. It's only the guy who wrote the song. No, I'm not saying you're wrong and I'm right. I'm just saying that's who's on this side of the argument.
Okay. Listen, we agree to disagree.
Elias. Okay. Bring it up with Bo.
Hey, Bo! Get in here, Bo.
Bo's didn't know he lived next to you. What's going on?
He's in apartment 5C.
Oh, okay.
It's both sides of the record.
I'm kidding.
Of course you are. But both sides of the record are equal in their part.
But how many albums in the history of music have two versions of the same song, a live and a studio version, on the same album?
I can tell you one.
Go ahead,
Sir Mix-a-Lot Greatest Hits is just 9 versions of Baby Got Back and 1 live version.
Okay, all right.
I bought it from a gas station in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
From a gas station, not an attendant? An actual gas station?
It's a human gas station.
So just a whole gas station sells albums?
It was a transformer, a very lazy transformer.
There's the album. Okay.
Here, take this. We've got a lot of copies
in cash?
Of it.
Did you put in cash or swipe a card?
He took Bitcoin.
Very good. That gas station sold a lot of records.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
All in all, I think this is a phenomenal record. Let's look at what some of the music journalists of yesteryear have said.
Yes.
Several retrospective reviews have been favorable. Mm-hmm. Who do we have here? Review in Guitar Player magazine.
Can I just say before we get to these reviews that in a way the Yardbirds suffered from not having, like, they did have hits in England, and some of these songs, you know, For Your Love and stuff were hits and happenings 10 years ago, but they weren't like the Beatles. They weren't like the Stones. They weren't like the Animals with House of Horizon. You know what I mean? They never really like broke through on a huge level. So they were always kind of a cult band.
Yeah.
Even at their peak, I believe so. But go ahead. And I feel like in retrospect, they're now more appreciated, right?
So I've got two that I'm going to drop.
Let me hear.
This is from Clapton biographer David Bowling from Guitar Player magazine. He said today, and this is in 1999, the Yardbirds' second American album sounds something like the ultimate garage band meets an end of the world guitarist. For a while in 65, though, having a rave up with the Yardbirds contained rock's freshest, most vital guitar playing.
Yeah.
And then Rolling Stone magazine, which ranked this 355 on the list, they noted, freed from Eric Clapton's blues purism and spurred by Jeff Beck's reckless exhibitionism, the Yardbirds launched a noisy rock and roll avant-garde. This is the bridge between beat groups and psychedelia.
This is me and Rolling Stone. We have this, Wayne Federman and Rolling Stone have the same, they're a bridge band. They're definitely a bridge band. No question.
And so this debuted at number 137 on the Billboard 200 and reached as high as 53 in February 66 and spent 33 weeks in total on the chart.
Okay. So people listen to it. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if it was more like later on, like when Clapton hit with Cream or with, you know, John Mayall and all of that stuff. But
yeah.
What other reviews? Keep reading. I just want you to read. I just want you to read.
Well, I've got some here. I got some facts from the record. You want to hear it?
Yes. Yes.
So first of all, we got to say this. This album did not make the cut for the 2020 Rolling Stone Top 500 album list. It did not.
Oh, so this has been removed.
This has been removed from the newer list. Wow. So after Clapton left the band, the initial recommendation to replace him was Jimmy Page, but yep. Page was happy with his session work at the time and referred his buddy Jeff Beck. It was only 2 days between Clapton's departure and Beck playing his first notes with the band.
Yep. Right after For Your Love. I don't know if I can't imagine that Clapton ever played For Your Love live, but keep going. Keep going.
Well, I don't know if I said this already, but Eric Clapton biographer David Bowling calls the album early and important rock and roll. It remains an important step in the evolution of rock music.
It's a step. It's a bridge. It's an evolutionary. It's incredible. This, if you're interested, you can just listen to Aerosmith and you can just listen to Led Zeppelin 1 and 2, and you don't have to listen to this. But if you're kind of curious the roots of this all, it's really fun to dive into this band.
No, I completely agree. And then here's the coolest shit. Towards the end of the 60s, the Yardbirds broke up while in the middle of a tour. Page, he's playing with them and wanted to keep the band going and eventually put together a band called the New Yardbirds, consisting of vocalist Robert Plant, bassist John Paul Jones, and drummer John Bonzo Bonham. They would eventually change their name, taken from a quote by the Who drummer, Keith Moon. Moon had said previously that their band would go over like a Led Zeppelin, and the name Led Zeppelin stuck. So listen, man, the Yardbirds, you don't get Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin was at one point the New Yardbirds.
Yeah.
With Peter Grant as their manager.
And it's funny because
wreaking havoc across the,
because I don't know if you remember in the 80s, in the 70s, there was the Monkees.
Yeah.
And then in the 80s, they had the New Monkees, right. And the New Monkees went on to become who?
Korn?
Korn. No, of course not.
No, of course. That's a good joke, though.
All right. Let's do some quickies and we'll get you out of here, okay?
Yeah. This was fun, by the way. This is fun.
This was great. Favorite song on the record?
Oh, all right. I'm looking at the... Well, it's... I have to say... It's got to be Train. It's got to be Train Kept. It's got to be the cover of Train Kept a Rollin' is my favorite track on the record.
Just look who's come around and now accepted the live part.
No, you're making a mistake. I'm not talking about I'm a Man. I'm talking about Train Kept a Rollin'.
All right. Least favorite song on the record.
Oh, well, that's easy. I'll tell you my two least favorite. My least favorite is, I hate to say it, the Gregorian Chant one. I don't like.
Heartbreaking.
Still, I'm sad. I know you love it. I don't. I just. Yeah, it's a great song to raise spirits from the dead. It's great. It's a great song if I want to take out the Ouija board and bring evil into the 21st century. Great song. Yeah. Thanks, guys. My second least favorite is the last song on the album. I don't like Here Tis. I know that's.
Play a little bit of Here Tis. Play a little bit of Here Tis, Ad.
Let me go Here Tis.
You love it. Now, it actually sounded better when I heard it. So forget the last one. I'm just going to stick with
Gregorian because you hate monks.
Yeah, the Gregorian. I hate the monks.
You hate the monks.
Go ahead.
All right. This is an interesting one.
What are yours? Can I ask what yours are? Can we go back and forth or no? Is it all just about Wayne?
Favorite song on the record when I did my big listen, Smokestack Lightning.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah,
I love it. I love it. But you can take any track from the second half of the record.
You like the Clapton over the Beck, even though you've met Beck.
I really do. Dude, he's slow hand, dude.
I know. By the way, during this time, he got his name Slowhand.
This is it?
Yeah, during this time. You want to know what it means?
He has Bell's palsy in his hand.
Jesus Christ. I apologize for everyone who's suffering from a viral disease called Bell's palsy. It comes, it goes. No, he would, because he used super light strings, you know, because he liked to bend those, you know, up 1.5 notes and all of that. He would often break strings, especially during a rave up. He would break strings. And then he would change the strings on stage. And during that time, the English audience, in a sarcastic English way, would do group. I'm a slow hand. And that's how he got the name. Just like, you know what I mean? Just like us. Come on, man. Change the strings.
Change the fucking strings.
String, Eric. Eric.
That reminds me. We did a goddamn comedy jam at in Brooklyn, and Burr was like a surprise guest dropping, and yeah. We did two songs with him. We did "Kickstart My Heart," mm-hmm. which Joe DeRosa sang with Burr on drums, and we were gonna do a Pantera song, and Joel, my guitarist, broke a string during the first song, "Kickstart My Heart," mm-hmm. and we basically, like, he needed to change a string, and he's like, you got to kill time. Now there's 500 people in the audience that are like insanely sweaty, and the room is so hot. So Joel could not get the string. It took him like 15 minutes. We had to like kill time. And so like Burr had to come from out behind the drum set and start doing like crowd work. And he was just so mad about it, 'cause it was like, it killed all the momentum.
I've never
seen more fear on Joel's face than trying to change a string. And I mean, just, we were dripping sweat. It was probably 140 degrees inside the venue, just no air, all humidity.
And 5 strings is just not enough.
No, what he needs to do is have an extra guitar just ready to go, just in case. You have to, you can't, you, it's, and that's the
problem.
In
a weird way, you're talking to Eric Clapton through him, right?
Yeah, 100%. Eric, you get another guitar.
Just have another guitar with
you. You got extra guitar, buddy. Just from the residuals this week from Tears from Heaven.
Oh my God.
Is it Tears from Heaven or Tears in Heaven? Tears from Heaven might be the Bruce Willis movie about Vietnam. All right. Here's a question. Here's a one. I'm curious to get your answer.
I'm going to bounce it back to you after I answer it. So be ready.
What song on this record?
Yeah.
Would you fuck to?
Do you know me? Do you know I don't? All right. Let me look. Let me look. This is not the kind of thing, because I don't really. I'm not like a have sex to music kind of guy.
Really? Would you just let CNN play in the background?
It's actually C-SPAN. C-SPAN, yeah. Mainly, yeah, yeah. Just the floor, just the house floor.
Just something about voting gets my dick hard. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Parliamentary rules. I fucking can't get any more excited. All right. This is not my thing. Like, I actually think none of these. They're all too... They're just too catchy and up. Like, these aren't to me.
You know what would be the perfect one?
Oh,
you
know, the chanting one.
The chanting one.
Chanting one might be the... Oh.
You just come out wearing like a shroud and you have like a string and you pull the string and it falls off your shoulder.
Oh my God, you're so funny. God damn it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Final answer.
It might have to be the Gregorian chant.
All right, and I feel like you already answered this, but I'm going to ask it again.
What about you?
I already answered it.
Oh, you're both of us.
I'm Gregorian.
Okay. Could you imagine maybe like the two of us getting prostitutes, putting that song on next to each other, like looking over like, wow, how great is life?
This is the tops, man.
This is incredible. Oh. This girl, this incredible.
She's just, it's Russian girls like
that. Right. They're completely confused. Like, this is incredible.
And then she looks up and she goes, great song.
Who is that? They were not the Yardbirds, the only song they wrote on the album, I'm a Rainbow. By the way, that's the way I deal with prostitutes. I love just talking to them, charming them, much more like that's connecting with them. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you got to woo them. You got to woo them. And then I feel like you answered this already. Why is this album important for the next generation to hear?
I don't know if it is. I don't know if this album is important for the next generation because there's so much music and it, and the story of music. And this is something I'm very passionate about, as you know. The story of music, it just moves. It just flips over so quickly. Like there's like even people like kids listening to music in 2021 is which is what I call this year. They like it, they just have a whole different reference to even what music is. And so I don't know. For those who are interested in like the blues based have hard metal, hard rock bands of the 60s and 70s, you know, and then the influence Guns N' Roses, the maybe like the bands that people listen to are like five generations away from that. I know I'm absolutely babbling about this, but I don't know. I mean, for me, I just think it's as a, any musical historian would have to at least look at a band that, that had these three guitarists in it and had those songs.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think it deserves to be on the 500 greatest albums list?
Oh, man. I'm shocked it dropped. That means it dropped 140-some points, 145 points, right? 145 albums got better than this album. This is the thing. It's like, what other Yard... This would be my question because I'm into these lists. What other Yardbirds albums are on the new list? And then I would be like, oh, okay, I can understand that. Because maybe they just want one Yardbirds album. They're just like, that's enough, you know?
I mean, this new list, man, it's not, it's all, dude, Sgt. Pepper, which was number one, dropped to number 25.
Wow.
Which is crazy. And then like some, and it was, it was definitely, well, but also they, what they did was they kind of like the, cause listen, the old list was made by like old white guys and musicians. Okay. And so what they did for the new list was bringing a lot of younger people, a lot of like, you know, different ethnic groups and backgrounds. Right. So it is like,
you know who they didn't bring in any, who? Any Gregorians.
Nope.
They didn't bother with one Gregorian to come in.
Top 20. They all would have been like, you got to put it on there.
Rave
you got to.
I'm going to rave up.
It's all we got.
No, in a way, I do understand that. That it was just like, okay, this was like, these are all white bands. And this is another all white band from the whitest place on earth. And maybe that's just kind of like, we're in this reckoning now. We're like, ugh. Can I just say, I don't know. Do you know who Adam Neely is by any chance?
I don't.
He's a bass player who teaches music theory on YouTube.
Okay.
And he's really in, because they're going through the same thing in classical music. In fact, there's a movement to rebrand classical music, not call it classical anymore, and call it music made popular by 18th century European composers. 18th and 19th century European composers.
I don't know. What's the, is there?
They're basically, they're saying, by saying classical, you're sort of like, oh, whatever was going on in India, whatever was going on in Africa, whatever was going on anywhere outside of white Europe is not classical. Is that right?
Yeah. Now, it makes sense. I don't know if I agree with it, but it's like,
no, dude. Yeah, but I understand the thought process. It was just like, yeah, maybe you don't like that weird Indian music that sounds not great to your ears, but that doesn't mean it's worse. Is that worse than Chopin?
I want to pull up this audition that I just got.
Yeah, let me hear.
Hold on, because it was, here it is. This is what they wrote for the role description. So the role is Oscar, character portrayed as male presenting. 30 to 40s, any ethnicity. Character portrayed as male presenting.
Yep. Yeah. Welcome.
Oh, shit. The Yardbirds are completely absent from the 2020 list.
Okay, well, that's crazy then. I can understand they're just like, we need one Yardbirds album instead of three or whatever it was. I could understand. I actually think this is the best Yardbirds album because you get Clapton and Beck on it. And the Jimmy Page stuff, you can just listen to Led Zeppelin. You don't have to listen to Happenings 10 years ago and stuff like that.
But dude, we have another Yardbirds record in like years, right? In like 2 weeks.
Is it the Engineer one?
Let me find it. Because I've got, if you looked at what my timeline is, I've got like area rugs. I've got coffee tables. I've got, I got to find a winter coat for New York.
Those are three of the best bands, by the way. Area Rugs was, I listened to them all the time.
What about Men's Puffer Jackets and Coats?
Oh, really?
That was their first record.
Yeah. Speaking of songs you like to fuck to.
Men's Puffer? Dude, I love Ultra Lightweight and Versatile. That's good.
These are great band names, by the way.
Great band names. Men's Parka. Nike Duck Boots, Relaxed Fit Washed, and then the Yardbirds Artist Facts. And then my favorite album is Post Attendee - Zoom. That's the best.
What did you find out, Adam?
So they come in at 350 with just the self-titled album Yardbirds, which is also known as Roger the Engineer.
Yeah, Roger the Engineer. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that has shapes.
I think we have Jerry Cantrell for that one from Alice in Chains.
What?
I think we do.
Okay.
Don't quote me.
Can I just ask, who is the biggest guest you've had so far besides me?
Well, you're first.
Yeah, of course.
Second was Bowser from Sha-na-na. Oh,
he played Woodstock.
We didn't have Bowser. I'd say, you know what? I'd say the biggest, if we're the strangest booking was, I would say Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh yeah,
he did Sam Cooke live at the Harlem Club. I mean, but then I've had your buddy Judd. I've had, you know, Wanda. I've had Burr a couple times. That's Jim, awesome. You know, I've had everybody. This is, I mean, let me look at the the coolest one.
I thought there might be some weird musician that you know.
Oh, I did. No.
I feel like you're in those circles that I'm not really in.
Well, I've had Jerry Harrison from the Talking Heads talking about Talking Heads. And it was the week after Modern Lovers, so it was a dual episode. I've had Mike Watt from the Minutemen, and he was like literally the week after Minutemen, which was so great.
Interesting. That's cool.
I mean, we've had, you know, we've had everybody. This is what's cool about this podcast, man, is that, you know, we're not talking about your basic shit anymore. We're talking about, you know, so it's not like a guest will come on and it's like, we're gonna talk. We might ask you questions about your career and stuff, but for the most part, we're just talking about the record and finding out some cool things. So, you know,
it's a really fun record, guys. It's really, I love the name of it.
The name's
intriguing. Having a rave up. That's what they're doing. We're going to jam it out is basically what it is, right?
Yeah, we're going to jam it out. And you know what?
And that's what you do for a living.
I jam? I do. Oh, yeah. I do. We're about to announce a goddamn comedy jam in LA and in New York. I'm doing dual comedy jams.
I love it.
So that means you have to be there because you're our good luck charm.
100%.
When you're there, August 23rd.
Oh yeah, I'm around.
I'll text you where it is. Well, no, it'll probably be announced by then. It's August 23rd at the Comedy Store in the main room.
Oh wow, there we go.
Yeah, we're moving it to it's just, you know, especially with me living here, it's just going to be just keeps my foot in the door.
No, I see you getting sets at the Comedy Cellar. I'm tracking your career.
Love it here.
You do?
Love. I can't believe it took me this long to move here. It really did. I feel like an artist. I feel like a real artist. Yeah, and I feel like growing. I'm growing at a rate on stage that would the amount of growth I've made in 2 months here, it would take me 2 years in Los Angeles.
Of course.
So from that, and then you're with some of the best joke writers in the world. And that makes you see them and you go, oh, I need to step my game up. Because there's people at open mics that are better than most comics at the Hollywood Improv tonight. Yeah. And it's like, there you go. But this was great, dude. Wayne, I love you to death. Thank you for coming on, buddy. Anything you want to promote? Go ahead, bud.
No. I mean, I have a book out called The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle that just came out, but that's basically it. And so that's, you can get that on Amazon if you're interested in the history of stand-up, through the whole thing, early lectures, vaudeville, nightclubs, comedy clubs, internet, the whole story.
Get it, everybody. Seriously, get the book.
If you're interested in stand-up, you might like it.
But also, you wrote a book about Pistol Pete Maravich.
Yeah, it's my second book. This is my second book.
Yeah, so get both of them from the Amazon. Get it from Amazon, or if you really feel so inclined, you know what? Go to a bookstore.
Yeah, go to a local bookstore.
Local bookstore, not Jeff Bezos, even though Amazon's just the easiest thing in the world. Man, he really is killing it, dude. He's doing a great job. No wonder he's worth $250 billion.
Worth a lot of money.
I just ordered 60 hangers, and they'll be here. They're probably here now. Right, I ordered them in the middle of the podcast.
You're about to order them. They're already here.
I literally, when I was looking at my phone, I ordered 60 hangers, and the guy, that was my lack of barked because.
Okay, I know I love to deep dive. And again, thank you so much for having me on. You know I love you.
I love you.
Are the hangers the kind with the little outside part that's like. There's like a little bit of cloth on it all the way around. Yep. What are those called? Do you know what I'm called? Adam, what are those called?
I'm looking it up now. Hangers.
Oh, okay.
I might have them right here.
It's not like just a metal hanger, and it's not the plastic kind. It's like, there's sort of like
fabric
this.
Airplane hangers is what comes up.
Fabric? Right, is that what it is? There's like a little bit of fabric like around. They're so fun.
Trellis print padded hanger.
No, that's not right. Sorry, I'm yelling at you. Suddenly, I'm. Anyway, all right. Are we done? We're done.
What did I tell you? The one and only Wayne Fetterman. Follow him on Twitter @Fetterman. Follow him on Instagram @InstaFetterman. Go to his website, WayneFetterman.com, for all things Wayne. Wayne is also co-producing a Judd Apatow-directed George Carlin documentary that will be on HBO. Just keep your eyes out for that and get his new book, The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle, where he is going to go into a deep, deep dive, just like he did for the Yardbirdies. All right, new music this week. Yardbirds 1965, our new music pick is Irish blues rockers Grainne Duffy. She actually performed at the Glastonbury Music Festival on the same lineup as the Yardbirds in 2008, and since then, she's written for the BBC, Sky TV, and performed on blues festivals across Europe. And you're listening to the song, Roll It, off her 2020 album, Voodoo Blues. And you can find links to the music on our website, the500podcast.com. If you want your music featured on The 500, send us your song. 500podcast@gmail.com. Send us a song. Put the album and artist that influenced you in the subject line. Guess what, y'all? Ooh, I'm moving out. Da-na-na-na-na-na. Billy Joel week is right. Next one, and you're gonna have some fun. Cause it's Billy Joel week. Yeah, don't be a freak. It's Billy Joel week. It's Billy Joel week. Next one. We are doing is his 1978 album, 52nd Street. Get on it. Listen to it. Do your homework. Stay fleecy. Doobie doobie.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gourley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Next Chapter Podcasts.